Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the Heal and Thrive After Narcissistic Abuse podcast. My name is Effie, and I'll be discussing another topic related to narcissistic abuse that you may have actually heard before or read about in your research. It's called triangulation, and we'll be discussing that. We'll also be discussing if you're out of the toxic relationship, what you can do to cope with the remnants of this type of horrific abuse that you experience throughout that relationship. Triangulation. What is triangulation? In the context of this type of abuse, it is any words or actions that bring in others into the dynamic of the relationship. And the narcissist particularly does this to manufacture jealousy, insecurity, and to exert his or her control over their partner. It, in the most sadistic cases, it could be intentional, where the narcissist is very sadistic in the way he goes about this. It's planned out, it's intentional. Or it could just be such a part of who this disordered person is and how he deals with situations and relationships that it just inevitably is a product of who this person is and what they bring into any relationship, any close relationship. So, to give you an example or several examples of how this manifests, while in the relationship, when the narcissist feels insecure or somehow knows that their partner is superior to them in many ways, whether because of how empathic the partner is, or intelligent or beautiful, but there's something about the partner that they envy and they want to control. A lot of this comes from a subconscious place where I think the narcissist feels extremely insecure and fears abandonment. Yes, ultimately they fear abandonment and to be exposed for who they are. And so they know this about themselves. They know that they lack, deep down they know that they lack in all of the beautiful things that their partner brings to the table. Now, a healthy individual would be complimented by this, would feel delighted and grateful for having been able to maintain a relationship with such a partner, but not the narcissist. Past the devaluation phase when they've gotten, the idealization, the beginning stage where they've put you on a pedestal and they've shown you off to everyone they know, especially their close family and friends, and they've portrayed you as this prized, listen to this word carefully, possession of theirs. It is something they attained. It's not about you. And this is the problem with a narcissist, is that their love for you and their admiration for you, unfortunately, doesn't hinge upon you as a separate individual that has both good and bad, right? Because we all have good and bad in us. We all have different parts to us. It is necessary that initially they put you on a pedestal, they show you off, they feel as if your positive qualities, they magnify them. Not saying that they don't exist and they aren't there, but they magnify them to such a degree. And it's like a reflection of who they are and what they were able to attain. Once that hook is in and they know they have you, and time goes on, and like anything else, a narcissist gets bored or used to what they have. And perhaps you've started noticing red flags, certain unacceptable, disrespectful, intolerable behavior. At that point, when you do mention or react to that behavior, they interpret it as criticism, as a narcissistic injury, as an attack on their ego, and they can't have that. So they begin to slowly chip away at you. They begin to knock you down, and they start doing it by trying to bring you back in line, to bring you back in line to where they feel that the tables have turned and they are in control of you, the relationship, and they feel empowered. One of the ways they do this is triangulation, and it's very, very damaging and destructive for the partner if it happens frequently enough throughout the relationship. It is quite damaging. So again, to give you examples, it could be something that initially we all might do is in discovering, talking about our partner's past to get to know them. We may talk about past loves or past relationships. But if it's done frequently enough and it's done in such a way as to punish or create jealousy and insecurity in the partner, then that is what we're talking about, the kind of triangulation that's destructive and that is a narcissistic tool. So they'll bring up exes, they'll start maybe the comparisons, or they'll say, you know, my ex called me the other day, or, you know, my ex is looking good these days, or sounding good, or they will start talking about friends or acquaintances of the opposite sex, people maybe that you haven't even met, but like, they will repeatedly bring up other people of the opposite sex to make you jealous. And they have a radar where they can sense, okay, these narcissists can sense when they've affected you. And they know they're on the right track, and so they keep doing it because they see, they feel, they sense that it works. And it does. Because we're human beings and we all want to feel special. We don't want to feel compared to someone. We don't want to have the image of their exes in front of us all the time, or even like the sense that anything can happen because this person is so in demand, Okay, they might start saying things like, oh, everybody's calling them, or this girl or that guy called them the other day, or has been leaving messages, or has been pursuing them in some way, or has been somehow coming back into their lives in some way. You know, so that is one type of, or one example of triangulation. Another example of triangulation could be just simply flirting. And it's not even just simply, because it is a terrible thing, and it is definitely highly abusive, to say the least. You're at a party, or you're at an event, or you're at a dinner, and your partner, your narcissistic partner, starts flirting with other people, starts getting a bit too friendly and touchy-feely, maybe exchanges contact information, perhaps fails to introduce you to someone they know or they've just met. Or alternatively, brings these people around for the purpose of putting you on edge, making you feel that, well, at any time, look how many people he knows, look how in demand he or she is. They can leave just like that. And so you better now be walking on eggshells, be hypervigilant, and get in line and do as the narcissist says, or else. So that is the message that is being conveyed. It's extremely destructive. It's meant to make you feel inferior, less than, and on high alert now. So now you've got those stress chemicals, hormones streaming through your body. You start feeling nervous. This is when you may begin to look into what he or she is doing more closely, and discovering things that further make you feel horrible or uncomfortable or disrespected in some way. And then when you confront the narcissist about it, now you become the jealous girlfriend or boyfriend and the crazy girlfriend and boyfriend, or the paranoid girlfriend or boyfriend. How did this play out for me? Okay, and one more thing. The worst form of triangulation, of course, is when you know they're cheating on you and they're disrespecting you to that level behind your back. And there are signs of it. You know it's happening. And then, of course, they're going to gaslight you when you confront them. And they're going to accuse you of somehow, maybe you're the one who's cheating, maybe you're the one who has the issues. It's all in your head. They're going to start distorting your reality and your perception of what you are experiencing. So that's how they're going to do it. And that's how it's going to unfold. Okay, to give you examples, in my situation, it started off very subtle. Again, with discussions of bringing up exes. To counter that, what I was doing was also talking about my exes, which I later regret myself for doing, because then he used that to say, well, you did it too, although he was the instigating party, although he was the one who kept bringing up an ex from 10 years ago. There's no reason why you're still talking about an ex from 10 years ago. Nevertheless, that's what he started doing with me. And right before our first trip together, he mentions in passing, in a very subtle way, oh yeah, you know, interesting enough, my ex who hasn't been in touch in all these years, well, in all this, in a long time, just contacted me out of the blue. It's funny how they sense when you're with somebody else. Doesn't say anything else about their level of communication, other than to say how she's doing much better, how she was asking him for advice on something, and that it seems as if her life has improved. Okay. And then he goes on to start talking to me about, well, she's this actress and how he couldn't get over her at the time, but that she cheated on him. Who knows if that's true? Of course, because you can never trust the narcissist's version, right? But at the time, I didn't know any better. So, yes, that she was beautiful in her look and the fact that she had landed some acting gig, prominent acting gig, and he kept talking and talking and talking about this. I remember thinking, why is he doing this? Why does he need to keep talking about this? And it's starting to not feel right. I started feeling off, just off, like it was a bit too much, a bit too in my face, almost as if to say, well, maybe you should start looking at yourself, which I started doing, and wondering, does he find me as attractive? Am I as successful? Am I going to be able to sustain his attention? So there was that happening. And then what he started doing was bringing up other women, female friends of his who he, interestingly enough, remembered to mention how they started off as a flirtation and how he kissed them but discovered that he wasn't attracted to them, so they stayed friends. But all I did was kiss them. And I've kissed a lot of people, Effie, he would say. I've kissed a lot of women. So there was that. I mean, when I step back and I think, this is a 40-year-old man who's telling me this, who is this person? I was in disbelief, but by that point, I was already in love with him. I was already hooked, and I thought, all right, you know, maybe I'll start pointing out that I'm just not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable. It's bothering me, and I'll just tell him if he could please ease up on it or stop this. And I did mention to him, and he stopped talking about the ex, but he continued bringing up other people. And then there were the parties that we went to. How in front of me he flirted with other women, he touched them, he called them babe. That was his thing. Everybody, whether it was a female friend or someone he just met at a party, babe, 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 babe. So then I would sit there thinking, well, that's what he calls me. He doesn't call me anything but babe. Now, how am I supposed to feel special as his girlfriend if he calls every other woman babe? That was another way that he was manufacturing jealousy and just insecurity in me. I remember an event we went to, and there were two very beautiful girls, sisters, at this party. He zeroes in on them, and, you know, I continued just mingling and networking. And then at some point he comes over and he's like, I want to introduce you. I really want to introduce you to these two girls. They're amazing. Amazing. So he brought me before them. And then I remember there were like 50 or 80 other people we could have talked to. But he zeroed in on these people. And then I remember him making eye contact with one of them, and I'm like, I know I'm not going crazy. He's making eye contact from across the room. And then at the end of the night, she was leaving, he walks over and hands her his business card. And then when I confronted him about this, he said, well, it has to do with business. I'm like, what business? He's like, film. They're in film. And I was in film. I'm like, when? 8 years ago? And what are you going to talk about? Well, they're working on a film, and I want to give them advice. I want to give her advice. I'm like, okay. You know what? I'm going to let this one go. Because I don't want to appear like the jealous one. But what did that actually do? That manufactured jealousy in me, of course. And then I was on the lookout. I didn't feel right. Again, I couldn't enjoy myself. Again, I was wondering, you know, who this person was and if I could trust him. And it doesn't end there. Another behavior of his that could fall under triangulation was he had this habit of screen grabbing photos from Instagram and other sources, photos that would come up in his newsfeed. And many of those photos were photos of models and women in sensual poses, very beautiful women. Sometimes it would be the entire photo, sometimes he would zero in on a body part. And he would even do this in front of me. Not to mention how he was following hundreds of these types of accounts on social media. And when I spoke to him about it and how it was bothering me, how all of this was bothering me, how I couldn't take it anymore, how I was spending valuable time now of my day and my life worrying over this, and how I didn't want to be in this kind of relationship. I wanted to feel carefree. I wanted to feel like I could trust, but that this was disturbing to me, and that this was something I didn't sign up for, and I didn't ask for. And as his partner, I tried to explain to him how that was making me feel less than and insecure. And you know what his response was? His response to me was, you have issues, which is all gaslighting. You're insecure. You need to deal with your jealousy. I've told you what. If I didn't care about you, I'd tell you to go F yourself. Yes, he used this language. I tell you to go F yourself, like I've told other women before. I'm not going to put up with jealousy. And then he proceeds to send me an article, a Psychology Today article on jealousy. And I remember saying to him, don't my feelings matter? He's like, yeah, but I matter more. And I'm an artist, and I gain inspiration from this. And I said, you gain inspiration? You gain inspiration from screen grabbing and saving photos of other hot women, of objectifying other women in front of me when you know that I'm uncomfortable with it? Is this where you draw your inspiration from? And what kind of art are you involved in that you need to have pictures of nudes and models and hot women on your phone, looking at on your phone? And what he did with that is twist my words completely. And he would never let this part go. He blame shifted. He made it about me, my innate insecurities and jealousy, that there's something wrong, fundamentally wrong with me. He shamed me. He shut me down. And then suddenly it became about what I had done to him. How dare you put me down and say that I'm not an artist? So it became about what I had done to him and how I had demeaned him by saying that he wasn't an artist. Now I know what I said. I know the context in which I said something related to that, but not that specific thing. And yet he twisted everything, changed the reality of what actually did happen and what actually did come out of my mouth, and then blame me for it all. And from that point forward, that became the theme. That became the way he started to blame shift, devalue, and he even used that as an excuse to break up with me when he was ready to go, in a most cruel way. A week before Christmas, a month before my birthday. It was around New Year's, so I had to go through Christmas, New Year's, and my birthday bedridden, depressed, with no closure, with everything being put on me, all the blame of why the relationship failed was due to me, according to him, and how he was the victim, how he felt misunderstood, how all the things that I was telling him. He lost sleep over, and he was up for months worrying about it, and he couldn't take it anymore. It wasn't working out for him. Not to mention how he stopped having sex with me the last 2 months and withheld sex. And his explanation for this was because of what was going on and what I was doing to him. Not the fact of what I know to be true, which was an intentional, sadistic withholding to hurt and punish me. Now I know all of this to be true. It's about 4.5 to 5 months after the breakup. And finally, I've come to a place where the cognitive dissonance is lessening and where I see this as clear as black and white, as clear as night and day. It is so destructive on so many levels, and you're left with insecurities that you never even had before. This is the craziness. This is the destructiveness of what these people do to their close ones, to their so-called loved ones. And the absurdity of it was that as he's breaking up with me, I'll never forget, he kept repeating how much he loved me and that he'd never loved anyone the way he loved me, but that he couldn't take it anymore. Again, blaming me for everything. Now, what had I done to him? What had I done to him? Had I disrespected him in any way? Had I flirted with other men like he had? Had I brought photos of hot men in front of him. The only thing that I remember in the beginning, because I was still healing from another relationship, toxic relationship, and he knew that. And actually, I had asked in the beginning for more time before fully developing the relationship. And instead of giving me time and pacing it, he did the opposite of what I asked for. And so in the beginning, I did talk about the ex and the relationship I was in, but in the context of how it had hurt me. So he had all of that information to use about me, which in the end he threw in my face too. Towards the end, he turned around and he used my past to say that you have issues and that's why men leave you. You push men away, if you can believe. I mean, it's complete emotional annihilation what he did to me. And this is what they do. And I don't wish it on my worst enemy, truly. It is very, very harmful, and the scars are deep. But I am here to say that we can heal. We can. And so let's talk about, now that you have a better idea of how all of this plays out, the general examples I gave and my own personal examples, how do we recover from these wounds, these terrible, terrible wounds? Well, the most important thing is that we're out of a toxic relationship and that we are now in a place where we are recovering. And I'm hoping for you that you are in no contact with the abuser, that you've broken those channels of communication, because it's the only way to clear your head and gain perspective as to what transpired and reclaim your truth and know what happened to you. So, assuming that you are now in this place of recovery, in no contact, what you can start doing is making a list of all the times that he she triangulated and gaslighted. Make a list so that you can easily go back and refer to it when you need it. When you're doubting what happened, go back and read that list. When you're feeling weak and think you're going to go contact the abuser again or get back together with the abuser, go back and read that list. That's one thing you can do. The other thing you can do is start taking care of yourself. Try, if you can, to either see a therapist or a doctor if you're depressed from all of this. If you need an objective party, a professional who understands narcissistic abuse and recovery and how difficult it is, find a professional with these qualifications, very important. But beyond that, start going to the gym or yoga, meditate, learn about essential oils, using a diffuser in your home and essential oils like bergamot, which is a stress reliever and is a extremely healing, soothing essential oil. Journal as you're going through the roller coaster of emotions. Put it down on paper, or Alternatively, vocalize it. Tell a good friend, tell a family member, someone who is validating, someone who is understanding and compassionate and will listen and validate your truth. Also, be gentle with yourself. Find your inner child. Embrace him or her. Be kind and gentle. Give yourself time to heal, as much time as you need. If you regress, it's okay. It's okay. There's no shame. There's no time frame. You take as much time as you need to recover, but you stay on course. Make another list. What are all of your amazing attributes? What do you know for a fact makes you, especially you, special? List everything that you do, that you are, your work, your hobbies, everything that makes you special and unique. Because what this triangulation did was rob you of your uniqueness. He or she tried to bring you down notches, to make you sit there and compare yourself to other people. No, we're not going to stay in that place anymore. No. And it doesn't matter who the abuser is now with or who he is befriending, okay? You are a unique human being. There will never be another you. Write down all the reasons why you're unique and special. And when you get weak, go back to that list as well. Very important. And also think about all of the amazing, other amazing people in your life who love you for who you are, who respect you. Make a list of those people that truly love, care, and accept you as a whole person and don't compare you to others. Make a list and remember that those people are in your life because you're loved, because they see your worth and your value. So what if there was one person that came, one disordered person that came into your life and demeaned you and compared you, triangulated you with others? Why does his opinion matter more than the myriad of all those other people that have come into your life and stayed for good reason? Because you are an amazing person. You are a special, unique person that they want to associate with. So those are some tips for now. We're going to revisit this topic because I think that this is the most insidious, horrible, emotionally abusive part of a relationship with a narcissistic abuser. Okay? I do believe that this is what causes the most destruction and creates the most cognitive dissonance for us survivors. So I will definitely be revisiting this topic as time goes on, but for now, I wanted to give you a general sense of what it is, how it manifests, and just some tips on coping mechanisms that we can quickly refer to. I hope this all helps. And I want you to know that I'm there with you. I'm still recovering. I'm still healing, getting better every day in understanding and gaining clarity. And my sense of self and my light back. And I want that for you too. I'm going to leave you with my email address. I would love to hear from you if you feel inclined to write to me. whether it is to say something about this podcast or share your story, ask a question. I'm not a licensed therapist or clinician, so I want to make that clear that I can't provide clinical advice, but that I understand as a survivor. So if there's any way that I can help in the limited way that I can, I will. So if you'd like to reach out to me, please do so. It is passagiae@gmail.com, and I'll spell that out for you. P as in Peter, A as in apple, S as in Sam, A as in apple, G as in George, I as in India, A as in apple, E as in Edward, @gmail.com. passagiae@gmail.com. Please feel free to reach out. And again, you're beautiful, beautiful souls, and you'll get through this. You will heal, and you will thrive, and you will be in a better place. Thank you for listening, and I will be back soon. Take care.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.